Welcome to the Cordwainers In Your Shoes podcast. My name is Katie Greenier and I'm the Creative Talent and Network Director at Pentland Brands. Cordwainers are shoemakers and today the worshipful company of Cordwainers works to promote footwear design and entrepreneurship in both education and the fashion industry. To celebrate the company's 750th anniversary, we have recorded this series to explore what it is like to live in the shoes of those who make them. Today, I'm joined by Beatrix Ong, who is a footwear legend. She has worked and collaborated with some of the world's greatest labels, a leading champion of sustainable and eco-focused practices within design, an author, MBE, an eloquent, understated, delightful, humble friend. Beatrix and I are both Cordwainers, members of the Ancient City of London Livery Company, which has been supporting shoemakers for the past 750 years. Hi, Beatrix. How are you?
Hi, I'm good.
So tell me, where are you today?
I'm just outside London.
So this is our second virtual podcast. I've got my headphones on and it's extremely hot day in London today. So what are you wearing, Beatrix?
I am wearing a hoodie and some tracksuit bottoms. And it's what I've been possibly wearing for the last year. haven't quite moved into what I refer to as hard clothes.
Oh, well, I'm actually quite excited that you're still in lockdown garbs. I've now gone straight on to full frocks and stillies again because I'm so bored of wearing lockdown garbs.
I know, I just can't say no to the elastication.
Who can? As soon as I get in, I do put the elastication back on, not gonna lie. So tell me a little bit about you. Where are you from?
So I was born in London, and when I was 6 months old, my family travelled to America. And then when I was two, I ended up in Hong Kong. So I grew up in Hong Kong for 14 years until I was 16, and then I came back to the UK.
And what did your family do?
Oh, both parents were doctors.
And so you never fancied going into a medical profession?
Do you know what? I'm quite squeamish of things. It's a bit of an odd one because I have been in situations where it's required quite sort of like emergency, urgent care. And I've been okay in those circumstances. But yeah, generally, I do get a bit squeamish. So I wouldn't make a very good doctor at all.
No, I don't believe you would. So what led you to design and Central St. Martin's?
I loved art in school, always have. And I guess at GCSE level or A level, I just kept on doing art and then, you know, applied for St. Martin's when I was 18. And even then, I don't think I knew what I wanted to go into. So I did a foundation course and sort of like tried a bit of everything. And then I actually did my degree in graphic and media design.
It's a totally different from footwear.
Yeah, I mean, it's seemingly, but actually they have so much in common.
So when did you discover shoes?
Do you know what? I've never been one of these people that had loads and loads of shoes. But when I was in school in Hong Kong, I had these little patent black Mary Janes that we had to wear for school. But I loved them, you know, so I would like look after them really, really well, make sure they were really shiny. And I was either in those or those really terrible plimsolls. I mean, we're talking about the 80s, right? So We didn't really have proper trainers. They were those plimsolls that had like one layer of rubber on the bottom. And then, you know, there was no like looking after your knees or anything. You're just pounding cement playgrounds with these really thin plimsolls.
How did you think your upbringing influenced who you are today?
Gosh, I mean, so many different ways. I think I was lucky enough to have travelled a lot when I was little with my family. Obviously, living in sort of and growing up in somewhere like Hong Kong, it was very, really, really cosmopolitan. All my friends were like a rainbow of nationalities. Yeah, and so, I mean, I think as a person, I'm always curious about people, find people really interesting. I find everything interesting. I find like culture interesting and I just love learning.
So tell us a bit how you ended up interning at Harper's Bazaar and how did your career life start?
So I won this competition at college to go to New York for 4 months. Or was it 6 months? I forget now. It was the 90s.
And what was the competition for? Can you remember?
Yeah, the competition was to literally go to New York and do an exchange. I think it was 6 months. It was like a whole semester and a little bit. So everyone in our course entered this competition because, you know, I mean, it was 1996. And I mean, especially for me, New York just seemed so, so exciting. Frightening, but exciting as well. And so everyone sort of entered with such different pieces of work. And then what I did, so the brief was, why should you go to New York? And then I answered it by, I actually went to a paper mill and they gave me a giant reel of paper that was blank. And then I pulled out about 2 meters of it and with a pencil and by hand, I wrote in different fonts as well. I wrote all the reasons why I thought I should go. And they ranged from quite punny ones, like, you know, because it's a city that never sleeps, to like quite serious ones about me just wanting to sort of expand and learn a totally different city. And so I think 5 of us won the competition. And then, you know, we hopped on a plane and,
and ended up in New York. How incredible. Do you still have that today? The winning piece?
I don't. You know what? Someone stole it.
But no, you're kidding.
Yeah, they stole it. So I was really gutted, really gutted. But, you know, that's life, isn't it?
Yeah, the highs and lows.
Yeah.
So then what happened when you got to New York?
Oh, my God, Katie, I was petrified. First thing I did was I cried.
Did you?
Because I was so scared.
I was so scared.
All these noises and stuff. And also, I only brought 2 suitcases. One, which was full of a duvet, because my mum said, if you go anywhere in the world, take your own duvet, because then it'd always make you feel at home. So I was like, all right. So I was so unprepared. And there were all these noises and, you know, people kept going, don't go past that street or don't go, you know, down that street. And so you're like, you know, just so petrified. I just cried for about an hour.
And what was it like there? What was it like working?
I loved it. I loved it because I think I really suit that culture of just everything being quite fast and efficient.
Yeah.
And the people I interned with were so amazing. They were so supportive. And actually, until now, I mean, we're talking over 20 years ago. I'm still in touch with the guy that I interned for.
That's incredible. And so lovely, because it means that your relationship must have been really solid.
I mean, he taught me so much. And I just worked as much as I could for them, you know, like I really put everything in because I was like, I'm just need to give as much as I can.
So what happened next?
So then after those 6 months, I came back to London because actually the sort of semester was in between, it was like in our third year of the degree. Mm-hmm. And so I had to come back and finish the year off. So I came back to London.
I bet you didn't want to come back, did you?
I didn't, no. I really didn't. They dragged me onto the plane. Yeah, I came back and then the boss I had at the time at Harper's Bazaar, he'd actually met Jimmy Choo in Paris during those shows. And, you know, he really kindly was like, I have this intern at the magazine and she's actually going to be going back to London. Do you need an intern? I recommend her. And that's how I started an internship at Jimmy Choo first.
What was the hell was that like?
That was pretty amazing. I mean, this was when he was still at the Metropolitan, so in East London off Kingsland Road. So it was very much a workshop still. And it was like really, really hands-on. And he wasn't that well known yet. He was just, I mean, that was when he just did Handmade and he did a lot of celebrities. And, you know, they came in from all over. If you can imagine all these Hollywood movie stars getting in a car, going, bombing it down Kingsland Road to come to this workshop. That's how amazingly talented he is. And they'd come all that way, you know, I just used to have You know, I was still at college and I'd have this phone call going, would it be possible for you to come in? We've got like Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman coming in.
Oh my goodness.
You know, and there you were in East London. And, you know, it totally wasn't trendy then. It was so, I'd go so far saying it was quite dangerous.
Yeah.
And you'd see all these people in his workshop. It was quite incredible.
And what were your main tasks then at that time?
Oh, tea making. Tea making, cleaning up, to just helping him out, you know, like everything, absolutely everything.
And did he teach you? Did he teach you the craft?
Yeah, and he also taught me how to make an amazing cup of tea. It was such a great experience because it was couture, right? So what I really learned to define is where a foot meets a shoe, where it can stay on, where it can be the most comfortable and the most flattering all at the same time. And that I learned from him.
Yeah, amazing. What a brilliant experience. And so then what happened? Because that in itself is just incredible. You know, if your story was to end there, then that would just be amazing. But it doesn't, does it?
Oh, no. What happened then? Oh, yeah. Then, of course, I graduated. I graduated, got my degree in graphics and media, and then just felt like, I don't know, I did graphics and media to go into advertising. And I think at that stage in my sort of like early 20s, I just thought, that's the path and I'm going to go down that path. So even though I had this amazing time and an experience at Jimmy Choo, I was like, I'm going to go into advertising. And so I did. And that was great. I mean, I learned so much then as well. So I joined an agency as an art director and there were quite big budgets when I started. And unfortunately, they started getting smaller and smaller. And I felt like creatively, I just wasn't satisfied anymore. And I left. I handed in my resignation and my boss was like, you know, that's such a shame. And he was kind of mean. He was kind of complimenting me, but mean at the same time. So he was like, such a shame you're leaving advertising. You could have been really big. And then at the same time he went, and you'll never amount to anything else anywhere else. I was like,
nice.
Yeah.
Like a bit of jealousy or envy, I think, in there.
It was a bit of a shake of a hand, but also a slap on the face at the same time.
Yeah, nice. Just what you want.
Yeah. And I left and I thought, because I discovered that my creative needs weren't met, I was like, well, what do I need to do then to make my mojo come back? And so I started looking. I was like, you know what, I'm just going to go back and look at what else I can learn. And then, of course, I was like, I'd covered so much during foundation and my degree in terms of applied art. So painting, sculpting, you know, fonts, typography. And then suddenly shoes came up. And I was like, even though I'd had that amazing experience at Jimmy Choo, I'd never made one. And I was like, oh, I'm gonna try this shoemaking course at Cordwainers. And so back I went to Mare Street, back to East London, taking a bus that took me 1.5 hours.
Kept pulling you back. The East
kept
End.
Pulling me back. Yeah, yeah. And I loved it. I loved everyone on the course. I loved the course. I loved all the tutors I had. You know, it was only going to be a short stint. I was going to, you know, I was like, I've got a degree under my belt, kind of want to learn something new. But I loved it so much that I was like, can I stay on and then catch up with the rest of, you know, the graduating year? And they let me do it. So they said, as long as you can do the work. And I was like this. I mean, I can't remember how it works now in college, but you had to book into the workshops. And I was like, right, I've got to take up all the workshop time that I can possibly book into and just get stuff done. And I worked really, really hard, but I don't really remember it being hard because I loved it so much. And then graduated.
So again, graduated twice.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, at this point in my life, I've now graduated from, I think, 6 or 7 things, but
it's like a never-ending student as well.
Yeah, yeah, I love it. I love it.
So then you went back to Jimmy Choo, is that right?
Yeah, so I went back to Jimmy Choo, and then this time as a creative director.
Fancy, amazing, thoroughly deserved.
And that's when it was really expanding. as a brand. So it was an amazing experience because I saw that. I saw how much work it took from being like a small workshop off in Kingsland Road to sort of being not just in Knightsbridge, but everywhere.
So how did you find out about your MBE?
I was in a nightclub. I paused because I didn't know whether that's a good thing to tell people.
No, it's totally a good thing to tell people.
Have I ever told you this, Katie? I don't think you've ever asked. Yeah.
No, I don't. I don't think I knew that you were in a nightclub when you got it. But then I'm not really surprised, and actually quite delighted.
I was okay. So,
and I actually think you're my only friend that has an MBE.
So I bet I've got to make the story good, right? Because
yeah,
expectations.
Hi.
No, so I was in a nightclub in Hong Kong because it was my cousin's wedding, and the whole week I had messages from my office going, "The Home Office keeps trying to get hold of you," and I was like, "That's weird." But then I kept saying, "Oh, can someone else deal with it? Is anyone else available in the office? You know, the managers that can maybe ask what it's about." But in my head, immediately, because if someone tells you that a body of authority is trying to get hold of you, in my head, I was like, "Oh, like what have I done? Like, did I forget to fill out something? Is, you know, I'm quite sure my passport doesn't expire until like 2026 or something." You know, I was a little worried. And they kept going, "No, they need to speak to you personally," which then, you know, amped up my anxiety. So they said to me, "There's a deadline of when you can get back to us. And it's 5 o'clock on Friday." And I was like, okay. And they gave, you know, they left me the number and everything. But of course, that week, my cousin's getting married. So we had all these things planned. And with the time difference, I just completely was like, "Oh, I'll deal with it on Friday." So I'm in this nightclub. Now, it must have been around midnight. And I'm sitting there with a couple of friends. And I go, "There's something I'm supposed to do." And I suddenly remember, I go, "I meant to call the Home Office." So I get up and I go to go out the door. And like nightclubs do, they were like, "If you leave, we can't let you back in again." And I said, "But all my friends are there." He was like, not having it. So I said, "Okay, fine." So I go outside the toilet, which is the quietest place in the nightclub, and I call the Home Office.
Is that that boom, 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 boom?
Yeah.
In the background.
Yeah. Yeah. And I go, "Hello, my name's Beatrix and I hear you've been trying to get hold of me." And the first thing they tell me is, "Oh, Beatrix, yes, it's in regards to a letter that we've sent you." I mean, I can see by your face, Katie, that your mind has gone where my mind has, which is a letter means it's really bad.
Well, I was thinking deportation.
Yes. Right? I've been British since I was born, but for whatever reason, I was like, yes, deportation. Something's happened. And I was just like, "Oh my God, what letter?" And they go, "Well, it's a letter from..." It's a letter. It's so bizarre. You've got this doosh, doosh, doosh in the background. And this really lovely man on the phone goes, "It's a letter from Her Majesty the Queen asking whether you'd accept in honour of an MBE." Oh, my gosh. I mean, I still laugh about it because I was like, what?
Did you think it was a wind-up, though?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, I would have thought that was a wind-up.
And I said... "Well, where did you send the letter?" is my first thing. And they told me the address, which was my old address in London. So I said, "Okay, very good. This seems legit." Yeah. Because they have an address of mine. And I said, "Oh, no, I'm sorry, that's my old address." And he said, "Oh, well, we'll have to send you a new letter and you'd have to formally accept. But because the time, because this is the deadline today, is we'll accept your answer verbally." So I was like, well, even if it is a wind up,
yeah, wow,
I should just say yes. So that's what I did. And he went, "Thank you very much. We're going to send the letter. So do look out for it. We have accepted like your answer, but formally you'll get a letter. You'll get all the information, blah, blah." So I thank him very much. I put down the phone and I go back to my friends and I just sit down.
God, it's so lucky. Beatrix, it's so lucky you didn't go outside the club. You wouldn't have been allowed back in.
How could you have sat down with your friends?
But I sat down, I didn't say anything for a minute because I'm kind of processing it. And my words were, I may or may not have just got an MBE. And then we just celebrated anyway because, you know, it's a nightclub.
I would have and liked to have been at that celebration, just saying, how brilliant. What a brilliant, I never knew that.
Yeah, that's how I found out. And it really, I mean, that really genuinely happened.
So what was it like meeting the Queen? What was that whole experience like?
Really very surreal. You know, I have to say, like, I'm so appreciative of some of the things that have happened in my life because just never in my wildest dreams, you know. I grew up in like a small sort of doctor's quarters in Hong Kong. That was really, really tough. And then to have that moment when you're standing in front of the Queen where she's saying your name and asking you questions is really surreal. Also pinning something to what you're wearing as well.
Do you remember anything she said, or is it just like one sort of almost just real dream?
I do remember. I remember what she said because she was wearing a dress with loads of flowers on it. And I was wearing a Stella McCartney that was floral. And so she congratulated me. And I said, oh, we're both wearing flowers. And so even in the video that I have that you get, you could see her chatting, saying something to me. And then she looks down at her dress. And then we start chatting about what we're wearing, what we're both wearing.
How lovely.
Yeah. And then she asked me questions about, you know, the footwear itself. So, yeah, I remember it like it was slow motion, you know. It is only, I don't know, about 2 minutes because she has to get through about a billion people in the day. Like, for me, it felt quite personal because we did talk about, I'm guessing, something that isn't normally in the sort of script, as it was.
How amazing and special. And, yeah, so proud of you, Beatrix.
Oh, thank you.
So it seems you've had so many varied design projects. What has been the most challenging and why?
I think most challenging was when I did the project in just outside Shanghai. I'd never worked in China before. I was really looking forward to it, but, you know, it was so different.
What was that? Was that a museum project?
It was a retail space that had a sort of museum stroke concept area. And so it was working, you know, over the course of my career in footwear, I've designed my own shops and managed the construction myself. But this was something complete, like it was for someone else. And like a much, much bigger team. It was huge. And the things I wanted to do were so ambitious. But I knew we could do it, but I was like, I want to build a tree on the second floor of this building.
Of course you do.
And as you do. And you've been to Asia and China many times, and people just want to make things happen. And it was quite extraordinary, but challenging at the same time, because I think I put a lot of pressure on myself. Even though every experience was new, I think I was like, I've got to get this really right because it's for someone else.
Do you have any handwriting or details that go into your work that you always put in?
You know, that it always has to be fun. It always has to be like a sense of humour in something. Even if I'm working on something quite serious, I think it's very important to have like humour and fun in everything you do.
I absolutely enjoy that, as you know. Who and what inspires you?
Oh, so many people. I mean, some of the people I know that I volunteer with, like sometimes I'm like, oh my gosh, that's amazing. Like what you do is amazing and really, really inspiring.
When did you start thinking about sustainability in your work?
I think it was around probably about 2012, if I was going to put a date to it. And that's because I was like, if I could do everything from scratch, like how would I do it? Like, what would I want it to be? And I was like, oh, I'd just like it to be. Like, so many years I've been to so many factories. And my product developer and I used to go, gosh, there's so much wastage. And just with loads and loads of components as well, you know, that you just chuck away. There must be a better way to do things. Maybe that was when, you know, the seed was planted, but didn't really know how back then, how I could change the business to accommodate that. And then around, you know, 2012, someone had the opportunity to. So I was like, what would I do? I've got a blank piece of paper. What would I do if I could do anything. And I was like, well, I'm going to try and make sustainable shoes.
And is that when the company of X came to fruition?
Well, that's when I started thinking more about it, because as time went on with the shoes, I was still like, there still needs to be much more improvement. And then just by meeting people, finding out more, I just thought, oh, well, there's other stuff that we can design and make that are like better alternatives.
Do you want to tell us more about the Company of X?
Yeah, I mean, it's really born out of collaboration. So working with social enterprises, working with other designers, working with other suppliers to really make things that don't look muddy like lots of lots of eco products look. And for it to be sort of like, okay, you know, how can we make this better, but also be more appealing aesthetically?
What do you believe has been the most defining moment in your career? I mean, I suppose the Queen's pretty special in the NBA, isn't it? That's pretty up there. Has there been any others? I don't know if it's defining though.
You know, like, I don't know. I think personally, maybe, you know, New York was pretty defining for me.
Yeah.
As a 19-year-old in a new big city. I'd say certainly my experience. I just say there's too many, because they don't just include the ups, they very much include the really low points. And I think one of the most defining is probably having to go through, you know, litigation with my business partners. That was quite, in terms of like soul searching as well. And career-wise, it really was like, I think defined me, but maybe jolted me back to thinking, okay, what is it that I want to do, like truly want to do? What is it that makes me really, really happy? And that was a very positive.
So what happened to lead to that in the first place? Is there a quick story to that or not?
I think the quick story is I just found out that they weren't doing very good things with my business, is maybe a simplistic way of putting it.
So you set up your own label in the name of Beatrix Song, and then what happened?
So, I mean, I ran it myself for about 6 to 9 years, I think. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, it got to that stage when I was like, oh, I must have investment. I must have business partners to grow this. I need someone else's help. It's quite overwhelming running a business on your own. And especially the size that it got, it was really quite like, you know, hands up, I really need some help here. And so I think if in every partnership, everyone goes in with some, you know, good intentions. I think that period when I started slowly sort of finding out things that were happening to my company was like a real eye-opener. I learned so much about the things that should be in place, the things that should be happening, as well as the things that were actually happening. So I learned an awful lot, actually. I mean, I'm actually really good at giving friends advice about employment law, corporate law, things that I'd never thought I would ever touch, Katie. I actually became really good at. And it wasn't just one thing. I think there was like a slow realization that, you know, my company wasn't being treated and used in a kosher way. And so there was time to then break up. And then the breakup was really messy.
So on a cheerier note, what would you have done? What would you have done if you weren't a designer?
If I wasn't a designer, I'd like to be helping children in some way, even if that might mean selling ice cream, which I've always thought would be a really good thing. The reason why I loved shoes was it was, you know, it's like selling ice cream to people. They're so happy when they leave with a pair of shoes. And that's what I think about ice cream. No one ever leaves an ice cream shop feeling sad. I think that's quite a nice thing to be able to,
unless you work
to give
in it.
People.
Unless you work in it like me, I used to work in an ice cream kiosk and I used to eat so much that I left feeling sad.
I don't believe that for a minute, because I was going to say that would be the other reason to work in an ice cream shop, is just to eat it.
You get to a point where you've eaten so much that you can't actually eat anymore. Right, you're also an author. So this links to the children as well, I think. Tell us a bit about your Bee and a Tree book.
So that was really a passion. That was really a passion project. Because of all these things that have happened in my life, both good and bad, I was thinking to myself, with a lot of kids I know, and that's through like either friends' children or going back into school and to do talks, etc., or the like the volunteer work I do. What I did notice was like children were really scared of failing. You know, they're really scared of making mistakes. And that's like from ages, you know, 6 to 18. So like if I'd go into like a university and give a talk, they were all a bit like, oh, we don't want to give that a go because that we might fail or we might come out looking stupid. And so what I thought was, and maybe comes back to your question about defining moments, is I'd go so far to say actually all my defining moments were the really terrible moments in my life, because that's when I really discovered A, who I was, and also those are the moments I checked in with who is it I want to be, and then rejig and go, oh yes, I remember now, that's where I want to be, that's who I want to be. So this book really is about failure, and it's about not being afraid of it. And that no matter how dark and horrible it gets, we all have the tools to be okay. And so that's why I wrote it. I wrote it at first really for myself. And I think it was just an interesting practice for me to try and write it like a children's book, to make it like light and fun, even if it was like really dark and dark and stormy. So I was like, oh, rainbows. How do I fit rainbows into this? So I wrote it for myself. And then, you know, a couple of friends were interested and they were like, oh, you know, I think it's really lovely. Perhaps you should look into, like, show it around, see what actually maybe get it published. And so I think it's about, is it 3 years ago? That has been published and it's available on Amazon.
I've actually got a signed copy, as you know, which I love.
Yeah, so I mean, the thing is, I didn't do any press or anything about it. I just emailed friends and I said, this is what I've done. Because the thing is, I really believe in the story. And I didn't want it to be like how I approached my shoes or other products, which is like, hey, look at this. What I wanted it to be was like, I've read this and I want to share it with you. So it's really... I mean, I'm really touched because honestly, I don't know how people know about it. But that's my intention, is for it to be spread.
And just be discovered, which is just really, it's really nice. It's a beautiful book. It really is.
Thank you.
So now I'm going to move on to the quick fire questions. Beatrix, the answers are quick.
Oh, you love these, don't you, Casey? I mean, okay.
This is my favourite bit.
I know. Yeah, never the person who you're asking's favourite bit, can I learn?
No, but that's all right. If you could talk to the Prime Minister, what would you say?
Oh, gosh, so much. I'd say so much.
Last thing you designed?
A dish, actually food, if you can say that. I designed some food. Oh. It's basically a marshmallow that I put seaweed onto.
Of course it is standard. Are you a morning or night person?
Both.
Marmite, love it or hate it?
Oh, I love it. I love it with peanut butter.
When
can I just say that when Marmite brought out peanut butter Marmite, I was like, what? I was doing that way before.
And do you buy it like that or do you still mix your own?
No, I mix my own.
Yeah, you don't need to buy a jar of it. You can literally do it yourself. Oh, right, if you were stranded on a tropical island, what two things would you want with you?
Oh, a really good book that I could read again and again and again and again and again. I actually have a book like that, J.D. Salinger, Catcher in the Rye. I do love that book. I can read it again and again and again and again. And my... I was going to say my glasses. It's because it's in my hand. But yeah, my eyesight's getting quite poorly. So
I think you're going
to be able
them.
To see. Yeah.
What was the last thing you fixed?
Oh, a drawer.
Tea or coffee?
Oh, both.
What song do you know off by heart?
Everything on Magic Radio. I discovered that the other day. I sung for 6 hours straight.
What looks delicious but tastes terrible?
Oh, marzipan. I don't like it.
I totally disagree with you there. What would you rather be, too hot or too cold?
Oh, no, I hate either. I can't.
You need to be just right.
Yes. Goldilocks.
On the scale of 1 to 10, how cool are you?
Minus 72.
You're a 10 in my eyes, Beatrix.
Then you've got to get your eyes fixed.
I need glasses. Thank you so much, Beatrix. It's been an absolute pleasure to walk in your shoes. How do we find out more about your work? Or how do we get in contact with you or buy your book? Or where do we see your stuff?
So my book is available on Amazon. If you do want to be as lucky as Katie and get a signed copy, you can get it directly from the website, which I think is called, I should really know this, I think it's called A Very Small Bee, but you can probably also find it through beatrixong.com. I'm quite an easy person to find because I haven't really named my brand like not my name.
And it's totally worth finding out more on Beatrix. For more interest in the Cordwainers livery, please visit our website, cordwainers.org, or our Instagram, Worshipful Company of Cordwainers. Beatrix, it's been absolute joy. I can't believe my mouth actually hurts from smiling at the screen. And even though I can't even see your face, I must look like a complete loser to Alex, our sound man. But yeah, it's been an absolute joy, and it always is.
Always. I always love our chats, Katie.